Studio 360.
So when I was a teenager, my mom came to me and said, I have a way for you to pay for college. I said, fantastic.
That's Heidi Schreck, an actor and writer who grew up in the 1970s and 80s in a little town in Washington State.
And she told me about this speech contest called the American Legion Oratory Contest. And I loved public speaking at the time. I loved debate. I was on the debate team. So I agreed to do this contest where I would travel the country giving speeches about the Constitution at American Legion halls all over, mostly all over the Northwest and Pacific Northwest.
Heidi Schreck has turned that experience into a play in which she stars that's about to open on Broadway. It's called What the Constitution Means to Me. In the show, she toggles between her teenage self in those competitions and herself today, digging deep into the Bill of Rights and her own family's generations of trouble. I saw the play off Broadway a little while ago and was totally charmed by Schreck's performance and improbable play. Here is a bit of it, her describing a memory from when she was in college as it relates to Roe v. Wade.
You know, actually, Jean and I went to see my Grandma Betty on the way to get my abortion, and I remembered I wanted to tell her what I was doing because I thought she might be excited for me. My great-great-grandma, Bricken, had 18 children. My Grandma Betty had 6 children and a violent husband. My aunt had 2 children by rape, and I thought she might be excited I was getting to do something different with my life. But after the way my mom reacted, I did not feel like I could tell her. I remember I almost did it. She made us these beautiful popovers. I sat down at the breakfast table with her, and I almost said, Grandma Betty, I'm pregnant. And instead, I said, Grandma Betty, I miss George, which is, I actually don't even know where it came from. George was this sock monkey that she sewed for me when I was 3 years old.
And her mother is in the play as well.
Yes.
That was part of the germinal idea of this play, right? That all of these generations of women would be in it. Because why?
Well, I started with the prompt that was given to me as a teenager, which is, can you draw a personal connection between your own life and the Constitution? So I didn't actually begin with the 4 generations of women. I began with myself, and I just started very plainly saying, like, okay, what constitutional decisions have affected my life the most? And of course, I got pretty quickly to reproductive rights and to Roe v. Wade, and then while researching that and realizing that those were all located in the Amendment 14, Section 1, and the 9th Amendment, the right to privacy, I, in doing my research, realized that almost all the decisions having to do with women's bodies had been made with the help of these 2 amendments. And then I thought, well, if I'm going to talk about what's personally affected my life, a huge part of my life has been this legacy of domestic violence in my family that I grew up knowing about and obviously affected my mom very deeply and affected my understanding of what it means to be a woman in this culture. And so I decided I would just keep following the prompt as far as it could go. And that took me back 4 generations.
So in the play, you keep coming back to this constitutional idea of a penumbra.
Yes.
Your first mention concerns arguments before the Supreme Court about the 9th Amendment.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
Which, again, I would suspect that 99-point-something% of Americans would not be able to say what the 9th Amendment is.
Yes.
I want to play a bit of you performing that penumbra talk.
Justice William O. Douglas, the great Supreme Court justice, when he talked about Amendment 9, he used the word penumbra. What is a penumbra? Well, gentlemen, here I am standing in the light, and there you are sitting in the darkness, and this space between us, this space right here of partial illumination, this shadowy space, this is a penumbra.
It was, it's beautiful. And of course, I was, you know, a little bit familiar with the William O. Douglas penumbra thing, but suddenly you're making it more than just the constitutional idea of penumbra.
I mean, I love the Ninth Amendment because it says that we have unenumerated rights, right? It says that there are rights that we have that are not listed in the Constitution, and that those rights are as real as the rights that are laid down. And I find that wonderfully mysterious for a document that's so
supposed to be the rule book.
Exactly, the rule book. I also, on a human level, find the idea that there is the Ninth Amendment, this penumbra, that within this sort of shadowy space are all the rights we don't know we have yet. And for me, I just found it a very compelling image, thinking about being a 15-year-old girl and not knowing yet what my rights were or what I was entitled to or who I was or what I could claim as my life. So the Ninth Amendment felt related to what it feels like or felt like for me to be a 15-year-old girl. And then I think as a country, we're trying to understand, like, what are these rights that we haven't enumerated in the Constitution? Like, who are the groups of people that this Constitution has failed to actively protect? And can we look to this Ninth Amendment? Can we look to this mysterious space and say, you know, what I see in these shadows is we need to protect this group of people. We need to protect people on the basis of sex and of gender. And I mean, obviously, they did this. They used the Ninth Amendment to, you know, win reproductive rights for women. They've used it in all sorts of cases.
That was part of Roe v. Wade.
That was part of Roe v. Wade. It originally started with Griswold versus Connecticut.
Which is about contraception.
Which is about contraception, yes. So I found it, I also just honestly, to be frank, I like how weird it is. It's a really weird amendment.
Well, and nobody, one could imagine, too, that taken the wrong way, like, let's say, not legalizing contraception or abortion. Like, if you can start, like, imagining things in the penumbra, that's a slippery slope that could work, could go the wrong way.
No, I mean, many people are mistrustful of it. Lawyers are mistrustful of it, and I respect that. I'm not a lawyer. I'm a writer and a dramatist.
You play one on television. Yeah, sort of.
So for me, it's the most poetic of the amendments. But I understand why it doesn't make for a good foundation in terms of, like, a Supreme Court case.
Right.
Which is why, in fact, it's been a problem for women's reproductive rights, because we're locating our reproductive rights in this Ninth Amendment, in this right to privacy, which is not enumerated ever. So it's this kind of hazy right that we're not sure we have, instead of rooting it in, say, equal protection under the law, saying that you can't have, you're not equal in this society if you don't have bodily autonomy, if you don't have the right to say whether to have children or not. That would have been, many scholars believe, that would have been a more firm foundation for Griswold versus Connecticut and Roe versus Wade.
You sound like a lawyer to me.
Thanks.
So you've been working on this play and workshopping it and then performing it as Donald Trump has become president. Has that fact and what he says and what he tweets and what the policies of his administration are made you change the play in any way?
I haven't changed the play in response to what's happening. I first performed this full version of the play that you saw in 2015. So Obama was president. I think the audience received some of it differently, clearly. Also, different sections become more electrifying depending on what's going on at any given time.
Right.
It's like, I remember we were doing the show this fall, and on the day that the AP had reported that Trump wanted to get rid of birthright citizenship, which, of course, he would not be able
Meaning
to do.
Meaning that children of immigrants born here would not automatically be citizens.
Exactly, which is in the 14th Amendment, Section 1. I recite that clause as part of my contest, as my 15-year-old self does. And that day, the whole audience applauded and cheered for the clause. And things like that have been happening throughout the run.
So in addition to being a successful actor and a successful playwright, you are also a pretty successful television writer as well.
Yes.
You've written for Nurse Jackie and Billions on Showtime, and also for Jill Soloway's I Love Dick, which was on Amazon. It's set in Marfa, Texas, about this married woman who's obsessed with the fictional local lord of the manor, an artist named Dick, played by Kevin Bacon. I want to play a scene from an episode of that show that you wrote. This is Catherine Hahn and Griffin Dunn. smoking a joint and discussing marriage.
Oh, boy.
Wouldn't it be so awesome if you could just experience, if you could just go have sex with anybody that you want. Just don't, just go and just know that I'm not going to be mad. Yeah. That in fact, when you come home, I'll ask you how it went.
I would come home, you'd be holding a rolling pin.
Shut up! I haven't had a rolling pin in my whole fucking life! What are you talking about?
Jealous.
Fine, I would be jealous. And that's just a feeling that I would have. And then I would just get over that feeling.
Uh-huh.
What if we just walked the walk?
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. What if we walked the walk?
If we walked the walk.
Because we could be like John and Yoko.
Frida and Diego.
We could be like Sid and Nancy.
He killed her. He killed her. What is so romantic?
I thought that she tripped.
Wow, this is a surprise. You've just surprised me with this. Most of that was written by me, but Griffin and Catherine, you know, added in there. I don't think I wrote the rolling pin.
It was funny. That, beautiful set piece, but yeah. Was it meant to do something? We have to have this happen in this episode in order for the series to go here?
I just really wanted to make sure before they embarked on this relationship with Dick, with the Kevin Bacon character, that we felt invested in their marriage and that we also saw the tenderness and humor and deep connection.
Because we've seen
there.
A lot of bickering and disconnection before.
Yeah, so. I think that was my goal, particularly with this episode, was like, can we feel the goodness of this marriage before we take a turn?
So if you could choose 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you're going to be more of the actor, Heidi Schreck, or more of the writer, Heidi Schreck?
My guess, more of the writer. I made a decision to focus primarily on writing about 5 years ago. Throughout my whole adulthood, I've been doing both. But I feel now that I'm getting older, there are a lot of things I want to make and write and create, and a lot of things I want to say and explore. And I think that for me, writing feels like the right way to do that.
What the Constitution Means to Me, by and starring the great Heidi Schreck, begins performances on Broadway March 14th.